Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance live from the Kintech Studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel offers industry-leading heli forklifts and engineered racking solutions. Visit them online at RackSteel.com. So, obviously a huge part of this Canucks season was, as it's become colloquially known, the rift. The rift between Elias Pettersson and JT Miller, and it was asked about directly to the coach Rick Tocchet and various players. A lot of players kind of brought it up in an indirect manner, talk about the noise, how the season kind of got out of off the rails. It was hanging over the proceedings, I would say, even when it wasn't being asked about directly today at the year-end media availability. And we were talking in the first segment about maybe the lack of alignment or the question of alignment between Rick Tocchet, the organization as a whole, and Elias Pettersson. And I think, again, their answers, their respective answers on the JT Miller, Elias Pettersson rift were pretty revealing. First, let's hear from Rick Tocchet on how he saw that whole situation play out.
Yeah, and this is obviously a really hard question because I'm a JT Miller fan. And Petey. They're both good hockey, great hockey players. JT played a lot of great hockey for me. Obviously, you guys know that there was some stuff there before even I got here. What level it, I don't know. I know that, obviously we had a really good year the year before since, and they had really good years. So, you never think it's going to, the smoldering's going to turn up. Did it get uncomfortable? Yeah. A lot of meetings, a lot of things. Could have something been different? I hear people on the sidelines, if I was coaching or if I was, on podcasts, they got to go to dinner and they got to fight it out. You don't think we've tried all that stuff? It just didn't work out. There's no, and I know everybody's looking for a bad guy. I don't know if there's a bad guy in the thing. It just didn't work out. And at that point, it had to be resolved, like Jim said, and that's what happened. It's unfortunate because, would I not want JT Miller in my lineup? 100%. But at that time, it just couldn't work.
Those dang podcasts. Rick Tocchet taking aim at the podcasts.
Well, I loved that. I loved that soliloquy. It was a lot of
Well, and here's, okay, number one thing for me was, did it get uncomfortable? Yeah, it got uncomfortable. It got uncomfortable. And then also, of course, the talk, and we've heard this before, about just how much they tried, the behind the scenes work. Guys go to dinner, figure it out. Yeah, we tried that. We tried everything.
You think we
basically
did?
Basically.
Now, did he suggest, though, that they tried, a bare-knuckle brawl between their
I think he meant more, verbally have it out.
Yeah.
Not literally, the team stands around in a circle as they wrestle. Although, maybe they should have tried that.
Yeah, I love that answer so much because there was so much, there was so much backseat driving, right? There's so many podcasts that have former players, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, they've been through stuff like this, but situations are unique. People are different, right? There's not one size fits all solutions necessarily to every interpersonal problem in every workplace, right? And there was a lot of, they should fight. Didn't at one point, I think it was Brian Burke who suggested that because Pettersson can't fight, he should effectively have a champion. he should
Dakota Joshua should fight for him.
Yeah,
be his second.
Yeah. Well, what do they call it in medieval times if you have someone who fights in your stead?
I think it's your second, isn't it? Or that's a duel.
Your second isn't a duel.
Maybe your champion.
Yeah. It's anyway. There's.
It's
there's,
like how like the Mountain in Game of Thrones 100%. Stood in for the Lannisters.
Yes. Or who stands in for Sansa Stark at the Eyrie. Anyway.
Can you imagine?
I swear, someone fact check it. Maybe it wasn't Burke, but I swear somebody at one point suggested that they should fight. And if Pettersson doesn't want to fight, fair enough, since he's a skilled guy, but he should have a champion to fight for him.
That's how
wild it got.
That would have been the greatest moment in Canucks history. What happened to practice today? Well, we wanted JT and Petey to fight. Well, it's not really a fair fight. So Petey tapped Joshua on the shoulder.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Unfortunately, Pettersson today has called his banners.
Yeah. We're going to war, fellas.
So I you know what? I just like when people really pick at the absurdity of certain things, and the conversation around Pettersson and JT Miller really did get absurd in moments over the course of the season. So I loved Tocchet just like head on addressing it and being like, man, there was some weird stuff said.
I totally agree. And again, the confirmation that it got uncomfortable. It was weird and it got uncomfortable. Like, that's just such a big thing in this situation. Again, that simple acknowledgement of certain facts. Now let's hear on the same subject from Elias Pettersson, one of the principals in the rift, the feud. Here are his thoughts on the JT Miller situation.
It was it's definitely was something I don't think neither of us could prepare for, the way it blew up. Just like that was like the focal point, not if we win or lose, it was like between us. Maybe we weren't the best of friends, but we respected each other as teammates. And
So again, the focus not on what happened, what went wrong. And again, no one's asking like for a specific blow by blow of like, why did you guys not get along? What started anything? But it's the implication that the number one salient part of that whole situation from Pettersson's perspective wasn't anything happening internally with the team. It was the fact that there was a lot of noise around it, right? And like, well, hey, we respected each other. Yeah, we weren't friends, but we respected each other. And man, it was weird how it blew up. And it's just such a contrast between that and Tocchet pretty honestly saying, yeah, it got uncomfortable and we had to work a lot at it and we just couldn't get it done. Like, if you didn't know anything about how this played out and you heard those two answers, and this was the first you were hearing about this rift, you'd think they were talking about completely different situations. They don't match at all. They don't match at all. And that's not even to say that Tocchet is correct. Maybe Pettersson, that's how he truly feels, is like he didn't see it as that big a deal. And more than anything, it was just an annoying thing to hear about from the media. But it just speaks to this larger disconnect that they're not on the same page, even about like what effect the rift, what effect that situation had on the team. And again, you had players like Jake DeBrusk. We won't play the clip here, but when he was asked about his season and said, you know, yeah, I scored a lot, but I could do more off the rush. I could play my game more. And then I think he said something along the lines of,
there was some stuff you've never seen.
Yeah, he's
before
like, you
in
think
your career.
You think you've seen it all. And then some stuff happens.
Well, and it's not like DeBrusk's Boston tenure was completely placid.
Nope.
I mean, that was a locker room that effectively tuned out Bruce Cassidy. And frankly, DeBrusk was central to that storyline in the Boston. So it's not as if this guy hasn't dealt with distractions and local media criticism over XYZ thing in the past. He absolutely has.
He was in a locker room with Brad Marchand. He's seen some weird stuff happen.
Yeah.
He's seen some, like, a lot of attention get focused on his team.
Yes.
And he was like, I thought I'd seen it all. And then this season happened. And again, it's just the either implicit in some of the players' cases or explicit in Tockett's case, the conversation about that situation, again, just doesn't match what Elias Pettersson had to say. And I feel like we're piling on Petey here a little bit. And again, maybe that's just genuine. Maybe those are his honest thoughts about it. That's totally fair. But you're looking for that sense of alignment. And at basically every opportunity, it was tough to really perceive that feeling of those guys being on the same page, despite some of the positive commentary from each of them in the course of the media availabilities today. And that was just another example of it. What did you think just kind of globally about how the team addressed the questions about the rift and the locker room and all of that?
Well, I thought the most interesting bit of commentary on the subject was from Brock Besser, when he noted that the team didn't do a good enough job keeping the noise out of the room.
Right.
And acknowledged that it led to them playing not their best hockey. Right. Because we knew that. Right. I mean, but I it felt stark to have someone say it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially someone with Brock Besser's stature, the guy who's been here a long time. Right. Who's, you know, frankly, like, I don't think we're ever really talking about Canucks games and being like, Besser needed to have a better effort tonight. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So for him to feel that way, I felt was pretty interesting.
This text comes in. What was it? What was the core of the problem? Goes on to say, we need to know what happened and why. This is not just two guys that didn't get along. This was something that people that have spent their entire career in hockey had never seen before. I get the curiosity. I don't think we're getting that. Until somebody involved decides to speak on or off the record with somebody and decides they want to get it out there, and for obvious reasons, I think everyone can understand, people are going to be reluctant to do so. I don't think we're going to get that version of it. And as much as I understand the curiosity behind it, of course I do. It would be crazy not to be curious about it. It's also not necessarily the most important thing going forward.
No.
Right? Like, the details are interesting, but the most important thing is how the team moves on, how the team adjusts, how the team learns from it, how Elias Pettersson learns from it, what steps you're taking to make sure a similar situation doesn't happen again or spiral out of control like that. So I get it. I just think also you're going to be wishing for a long time. If that's what you're most interested in, fair enough. We're probably not getting those details anytime soon.
At the end of the day, sometimes you have to know without knowing, and you have to be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're never going
to... You just kind of have to fill in the blanks for yourself.
Yeah, we're never going to get the full story here. And that, I understand being frustrated about it, but that is what it is. Yeah. And I think most likely, people had never seen anything like it because of the unique personalities at play. Like, the key here is there are unique things about Pettersson as an individual and about JT Miller as an individual that made them oil and water in a team environment that prevented them from effectively partnering with one another.
Yep.
And I don't know that knowing the full details...
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think
it's going to change
our role as kind of trying to analyze the team. I don't think the details are required.
No.
Now, is it possible that if we had the full details, it would change our perspective? Maybe. But as you say, the fact of it existing is far and away the most important thing. This text comes in unsigned. You can send your thoughts in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We got a full open show today, so full of reaction and interpretation and analysis of what we heard from the players and Rick Tocchet today at their year-end media availability. This one comes in unsigned. I didn't like Quinn's answer about playing a role in PD's training. Sure, you can't hold his hand, but if you care about winning, be willing to be an a-hole to push your teammates. And if PD can't handle a guy like Quinn pushing him, then you have your answer. It's time to trade PD. Quinn also needs to take a more active role in getting guys to a higher level. Look at Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Tom Brady. They didn't leave that to chance. Let's hear, because I do think the tone and the wording and everything, a really fascinating answer from Quinn Hughes when he was asked specifically, do you have a role in helping PD train this summer? Here's what Quinn Hughes had to say.
I mean, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think that, you know, every guy, you get in what you put out. Every guy's gonna, you know, has to train the way they want to train, do what they want to do. I've always been a, you know, big believer in PD, and yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
So as we talked about earlier, if you want to focus on the last thing you said there, I've always been a big believer in PD, and I'll leave it at that. You can certainly do that. I think the you get in what you put out is really interesting, a really fascinating commentary, as well as, hey, every guy's got to train their own way. I think that's very, very interesting. I think it's also notable that Rick Tocchet said Quinn Hughes was going to be hosting some teammates in Michigan as part of his training over the summer. Based on what Hughes said there, it doesn't sound like Elias Pettersson is going to be part of that.
Not getting the invite?
Either he didn't get the invite or got the invite and didn't want to, but it just doesn't sound like that's going to be happening. So the texter's point about, well, Quinn Hughes has to play an active role here, we have no idea. Maybe he's tried. Maybe he said, hey, Petey, come on. Come down to Michigan. We'll do it. It'll be great. I've got a great program. I've got a great group of guys I work with. It'll be really good for you. Maybe he was rebuffed. We don't know. I don't think you can put it on Quinn Hughes because, like, this isn't a guy. This isn't Quinn Hughes trying to shepherd a recent, you know, first overall draft pick. Like, if the Canucks had drafted Connor Bedard and it was like, hey, Quinn Hughes, you have a real role here in teaching this guy how to be an NHL pro and teaching him how you prepare. Petey's older than Quinn Hughes. He was drafted before him. He's making $11.6 million. He's got a letter on his chest. Can Quinn encourage him and all that? Yes, he absolutely can. But as Quinn Hughes said, like, ultimately, it comes down to the individual. There's only so much you can do to try to drag somebody in that position who's supposed to be your peer on the team, the kind of co-leader, best player with you. There's only so much you can do to change that guy's habits. It has to come from him internally more than anything else, more than it can come from anything else externally. And that's ultimately what I took away from Quinn Hughes's answer there, is him saying, I believe in Petey, but it's got to be him. It can't be me. It can't be me doing it for him. He has to figure out what works for him, and he's going to get in ultimately what he puts out, or he's going to get out what he puts in to his preparation and his training over the summer.
Yeah, and look, there might have been an element too where you're not going to infantilize your teammate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I respect Pettersson enough that he can train himself, and I'm not going to, he doesn't need me watching over his shoulder.
Yeah,
you know, so
I think that's part of it.
I think that's part of it too. So look, again, I'm not reading too much into Quinn Hughes's commentary one way or the other, because I felt like he was pretty under the weather.
That's fair. Still, can read a little bit into it.
Well, for sure. I'm not criticizing anyone who's doing it. I just want to stop short. I don't know. I don't know that that was like, it wasn't a player interested in really reflecting in the moment. And
that's fair.
I've worked with Quinn Hughes enough to know that there are times where the going is good and times where it's not necessarily, and he's not going to really let you in. And that's perfectly fair, perfectly fine. And I just felt like today was not a day where he was really going to dig deep on what happened and what's next for him or his teammates. And that'll come. Like, that'll come. We'll hear that from him at some point. Because there are things that he's going to want to say publicly about this season and about the organization's goals and what needs to happen. And it just that wasn't the moment today. And I think it's important to acknowledge that.
That's fair. All right. 650-650, as I mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll dive into the inbox next. Lots of thoughts coming in about Elias Pettersson specifically, that situation, what fans thought about what they heard from Elias Pettersson today, what they want to do with Elias Pettersson, the choice management has to make going into the summer. So we'll read some of those texts. We should probably play some of what we heard from Rick Tocchet at some point as well about his future, and we can get it. We talked about that in the first segment, but we can dive back into that a little bit as well. So 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your thoughts in, more reaction to everything we heard from Canucks media availability today here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Should mention, it's Good Friday. Hope you're having a good Friday. If you have the day off, thanks for making us a part of your day.
Well, it is Good Friday, Jamie.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a Good Friday. It is Good Friday.
No, but you know what I mean. A good Good Friday.
A good Good Friday.
Yeah.
A very good Friday?
Very good Friday.
The best Friday. Because that's what Good Friday got its name from.
That's right.
It was such a good Friday that forever.
Well, in the end, it was. It turned out.
48 hours later, it was pretty special.
You know what? In retrospect, that was a great Friday.
Still don't think it was a good Friday. It was more like a redeemed Friday.
All right.
It wasn't a good Friday at the time.
No, probably not. I don't know if they named it that right away. If they went home.
Maybe the Romans did.
Like high-fiving. Okay, let's. We're straying into some dangerous ground here. Anyways, I hope everyone's having a great start to their Easter weekend. And enjoying Good Friday.
And getting a little bit of heresy done on the radio.
Right. That's right.
Just a little bit.
Schedule update for the rest of the day here, because, of course, it was the year-end media availability from the Canucks players and head coach Rick Tocchet earlier today. So we'll go to 2, our normal time slot. After that, the People's Show, 2-hour edition with Bick and Randeep Janda, and then 2 hours of Canucks Central with Reach and Sat as well. And we expect that, or I think it's been officially announced, you can confirm this for me, that
I can't.
Canucks media will speak 10 a.m. on Monday.
Got it.
Okay. I saw that on Twitter. Apologies for not giving credit to the media person that tweeted it out, but that's what I've seen. So we'll see. We'll see if it plays out 10 a.m. on Monday for Canucks management speaking. 650-650, as I mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one came in from Charles in Langley. So in summer of 2023, the core of the team as a whole was better prepared, came to camp early, better attitude. Brock said they were sick of losing and had a great season. Then they followed up by not preparing to the same level, did not come to camp early in 2024, terrible attitude, dysfunctional issues, and had a terrible season. Pretty obvious what they need to do. And I think he's pretty clearly saying, like, hey, why don't you try what you did in 2023, get here early, have that type of attitude and commitment, and see if it puts you in better stead going in to next season. It ties into something that you asked a couple of the players about during the course of today's availabilities, which was the difficulty this group has had going back, I would say, really to the bubble playoff run. Now, there's some personnel things that played a factor in there, but the difficulty this group and this team has had in sustaining success, bridging success over multiple seasons, as opposed to either a really good playoff run, one really good season, or even a good segment of a season, like we've seen under Bruce Boudreau. Did you feel like you got some insight from the players themselves into why that has been a struggle for this team specifically and this group of players, you know, some of whom have now been here quite some time?
Well, what Tyler Myers suggested, it was parity.
Parity and turnover, he said. He pointed to turnover right? as well. And I do think, you know, you go back to the post-bubble playoffs, like turnover, I think we would all say, played a major, major issue there. So if it's not an
super
unfair
fair.
Comment from Tyler Myers.
We should have kept Chris Tanev.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tyler Toffoli.
I think we all agree.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see Tanev tie the game up for the Maple Leafs last night with a second left?
There you go.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Man, that toothless grin. And it's like, he's still doing it. He's still awesome. What a cool player. Would you be happy enough for Chris Tanev that a deep Maple Leafs playoff run would be tolerable?
Deep would be fine.
But not,
I have no problem.
Not ultimate.
No, not ultimately successful. Sorry, Tanev. Sorry, Chris.
Chris Tanev lifting the Stanley Cup.
It would be a silver lining. A silver lining, I would say.
I think it'd be pretty cool, man.
My dream.
I honestly, there is not an active player. First of all, if Chris Tanev were to lift the cup, he would be the first member of the 2011 Stanley Cup finalist Canucks team to actually win one. Right? Since they lost that game seven, no one else went on to win one at any point.
That's wild.
So it would break that curse.
Okay.
I can't think of another player in the league who I'd be happier to see lift a cup.
That's fair. I get that.
Especially because I've already seen Barkey do it.
My dream with the Leafs is always... Now, I do like when they go out in the first round. That's funny. But I always think the best case, as somebody who works for Rogers, but also just enjoys when the Leafs fail, is Game 7 loss in the Stanley Cup Finals. Because then Rogers gets all the revenue, right? They still went to Game 7. So they got all that broadcasting revenue and advertising revenue.
You're like a cheap owner, man.
But...
This is a cheap owner take.
But...
Where it's like, I didn't have to buy any rings. Didn't
but
have to,
there's
didn't
still
have to pay
additional.
For the
there's a still additional psychic damage done to the Leafs fans and the organization. Yeah. That's the ultimate. Now you're playing with fire. You're gambling because you're in Game 7. They could ultimately win.
I don't think I want to see Chris Tanev losing another Stanley Cup final Game 7.
That would be tough.
I'm sorry.
That would be tough.
I'm sorry. I can't go there with you, Jamie.
I also do think it would be great if the Leafs lost in overtime of Game 7. That's like that would be the cherry on top.
Oh. Has that happened?
I don't think it has. Someone may be able to correct me on this, but I don't think there ever has been a Game 7 deciding Stanley Cup Final overtime.
Oh,
don't we need that in our life? Can you imagine sitting down and watching that?
I can, and I'm like so excited.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, it would be unbelievable.
Absolutely incredible.
Provided it's not Vancouver involved,
yes.
Because this market would go losing its mind.
Oh, my gosh.
I really don't want that for Canucks fans. That would be deeply unfair.
I think that's the most stressful sports experience that exists. In like the
By
current
far.
Setup of all major sports formats, nothing would top that.
Nothing.
Can you imagine? Oh, man.
I mean, remember overtime in the Four Nations?
Yeah.
That was insane.
A lot of people texting in Luongo won. As an exec, we were talking as a player, guys. And it was great. It was great to see Luongo win as an exec.
I was super happy to see Luongo win.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
We were making the point about as a player. This text came in as well. unsigned. They say not to be like a wow-wow PD apologist, but I do think he's kind of damned no matter what he says to the media. He obviously hates the availabilities, which is too bad. It's part of his job. But I don't think it matters much what he says at this point because people will take umbrage with it no matter what. He had his come to Jesus moment before the latest injury. People were largely happy with the honesty and humility he showed. And it kind of feels like now everyone has forgotten that and they just want to sit there and take in his self-flagellation for their own satisfaction. He seems like a pretty proud guy, so I could see why he doesn't want to do that. And then he finishes. And yes, I used big words to make Drance happy.
Thank you.
I think that's a good point about the damned if he does, damned if he doesn't.
I think it's a good point to a point.
Now, yes, because I'm like, this is always the struggle, right? Because you get grouped in with what everyone else is saying. I try to have a consistent standard for these things, right? And some people might say, well, you failed at that. You've been too harsh on him. I also try not to make it a moral thing. Like I don't think it's a moral failing or a character failing on the part of Elias Pettersson that I was left unsatisfied with his answers at the podium today. I try to base everything on what information does this give us to help us better understand what we just saw this season and what we're likely to see going forward. That's the lens, the approach I'm trying to bring. And again, some people might have thoughts about whether or not I'm successful at that. From that lens, I don't need to see the self-flagellation. It's not about that for me. There are the texter's right. There is that contingent of the fan base who wants to see that because they're angry, they're frustrated, there's a loss of faith, they feel like they've been cheated in some way, and you want to see that. I don't really care about that. I just want the sense that you're thinking about it. That's what I want more than anything, and that's what I felt was missing. So the texter's right. Like, even no matter what he says, there are people who are going to find ways to be upset about it, to take umbrage, as he says. There are people who just you want to view this in kind of moral terms, character terms. But I think once you even peel back those kind of layers of frustration, there's reasons to be concerned and unsatisfied. Take all of that emotional stuff out. There's still those reasons. And I try to apply that standard. And again, by that standard, he fell short. The texter also references the earlier media availability where he did seem to really be taking ownership. Fair to say that, like, well, is he not getting credit for that anymore? But you got to keep, like, that's what we want to see more of. Like, that was positive because it felt like it was turning over a new page, starting a new chapter. It's like, okay, hey, this is how it's going to be going forward. And then the next real time we hear from him with a chance to do it, it's different. So, he still gets credit for the one time he did it, but you want it to be a permanent thing if you're going to have confidence in the partnership going forward.
So I think confidence is the word.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't like really care about the content of what's said. I don't care that a player doesn't like doing it. I do dislike when a player like Filip Hronek is as disdainful as he is about not liking doing it. You know, Alex Edler didn't love doing it, but Alex Edler was available all the time and polite about it, understood that it was part of his job, right? Hronek literally sneers through, like, he was asked a question by PJ today. What, a 7-word answer, and then he like stopped short of actually answering the question. Like, that I actually think is like, do your job, man. Do your job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're people pay to watch you play hockey. You might be the second or third most important player on this team next season.
That's a good point.
Like, take it seriously that you're representing this community and this organization that pays you well. But for a best player like Pettersson, I just think the confidence side of it, it's not that I want anything from him, to be very clear, right? If he wants to talk to me or tell me his story, that's great. I'll always do that, you know? I've worked with him in the past on things and it's been fun. I've talked to him in the past and it's been completely not fun. I've dealt with him and chatted with him when he's been struggling and you could tell that he was defiant about it. I've talked to him when he was struggling and you could tell that it was really getting to him. Like, I've seen both sides of that. I do think, given his central importance to this team, given his central importance to this franchise as a draw, that you do want to come out of an environment like the one he faced today, inspiring some measure of market confidence in your ability to turn things around.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about accountability. It's not about self-flagellation. I legitimately think it's like, it's business, man. Like, it's business. It's, does what you hear from Pettersson today make you feel better about this team's chances next season?
Well, I'll drill
or
it,
not.
I'll drill it down to really dollars and cents. If you're a fan who's in a lucky enough position to be considering buying season's tickets, but you're on the fence, which way is it swaying you? And I'm not trying to say there's a right answer, but I can speak for myself. I can speak for myself. If I was in that situation where I'm considering committing a lot of money to support the team and be a part of it and go there, you know, maybe 41 times next year in the regular season, it in my situation, I think it would become harder to do that, having heard that today. And that's really what we're talking about when you get to the business aspect of it, right? Like, team fans in this market are really smart. They're really sharp. They understand hockey. They understood what they saw from Elias Pettersson this year. And they want to know that it's going to be different. They want to know that it's going to be different. And is talk cheap? Yes, it is. But you're also going to make decisions. People are going to make decisions based on what they hear in this type of environment. And if you were hoping to hear certain things from Elias Pettersson, which I think is very reasonable as a fan, I don't think you got that reason. Like, I don't think you got that nudge to become more confident and more willing to spend money or invest time in the Canucks. And when the Canucks have invested as much as they have in Elias Pettersson and he's wearing a letter for you, that's tough. That's a really tough spot to be in.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't that there was, do you remember when Pettersson scored a goal and he had a big fist pump afterwards and Tocchet was like really happy to see that emotion?
Yep.
You know, I think more than anything, it's just like, Showing that, I think matters a little bit given just how cool it's felt to watch him play.
Yeah, how cool it has been.
So, yeah, this market is ganging up on Pettersson, and it sucks. There is a lot of pressure on him going into this offseason. There's been questions about his training, questions about his schedule, questions about why Quinn Hughes won't help him train. Like, honestly, it is a little ridiculous. And so I understand if you're a fan watching this and you're frustrated with the, you know, flapping gums, the blabbermouths like you and I going on about this. But, I mean, what else can we do? Like, the fact is that Rick Tocchet was going on about it. The organized Patrick Alvin has been going on about it.
Guess what he's going to talk about a lot on Monday? That.
Yeah. This is, there is no path back to contention for the Canucks that doesn't include either winning a Pettersson trade or getting Pettersson back to form.
Yeah. This text comes in from Josh in Mission. I agree with the texter. I also don't want to see Petey beating himself up continually. It's not helpful for his confidence. Getting through the interrogation today was good, and he just needs to move forward. That's a fair take.
Fine.
That's a fair take, honestly. And it's like, obviously we're going to zero in on this today because it's a big deal. The year-end media availability is a big deal. There's also a chance that he does go back to Sweden and have an incredible summer and comes in and is awesome next year.
I won't be surprised by that. I still think Pettersson's an enormously talented player. And I hope that's what we see. I hope that's what we see for him. I hope that's what we see for the Canucks franchise. Yeah. Like, that'd be great.
And I think it's important to acknowledge that is absolutely on the table. And just because I'm dissatisfied with what I heard from him doesn't take it off the table. It's just one data point.
I'm not dissatisfied either. I'm just unsettled.
Right.
I just don't understand what's happened. And I don't understand his lack of curiosity on the matter.
That's the big one for me.
Those are the two things that the last question he was asked, I tried to give him a gift of like, hey, you've struggled before, you've come through it. Can you use that? There's no defiance.
I mean, it's a low bar, but I thought that was his best answer, to be honest.
It was.
Where he said, like, I turned it around, I'm going to do it again.
I was trying to give a guy a gift.
Yeah.
Honestly, I was. Like, I like Pettersson enough that I was like, hey, man, like, I just want to see a little bit of confidence, a little bit of swagger. You guys are making too much of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go back. I'm going to have a great summer. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I want to see. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, we've seen great players struggle. I understand that confidence can be a brittle thing and that there's a lot of pressure on these guys, but you're the highest paid player on an NHL team. I just want to see a little swagger.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
By the way, according to multiple texters, Detroit twice, 1950 and 1954, won the Stanley Cup in Game 7 overtime.
Over?
I don't know. They didn't include that. Wow. And I didn't do the extra research.
Well, because I'm not interested in winning it.
I can tell you it's one of five teams.
I'm interested in losing it that way. Right? That's the pain.
That's true. That would be the real.
I have the answers to that.
Let's go.
Yeah.
So in 1950, they won in double overtime
against
the Rangers.
Wow.
And in 1954, 429 into OT against Montreal.
Whew. Well, no one feels bad for Montreal.
Double overtime.
It's like, oh no, Montreal lost.
Yeah,
most storied franchise
ever. They're
going
to win seven in a row right after this, yeah.
Yeah. Seven in a row, yeah.
Man, double overtime. That's awesome. Oh, we should be so lucky.
Although they're going to lose four in a row against the Caps.
That's on my sports fan bucket list. Game 7, Stanley Cup final overtime.
Yeah.
Like, before I die, that's what I want to see.
Yeah, me too. But I don't want to see it from a, like, I don't want to see it if it's too, like, it's, okay, here's the scenario. You ready?
Yeah.
The year is 2038.
Okay.
10 years from now, the Vancouver Canucks organization finally decides to rebuild.
Like, first of all, your math is wrong, but anyways, I see what you're saying.
The year is 2038.
And then you said 10 years from now. I was like, that's not right.
It's no 10 years from now. Yeah. The Canucks decide to rebuild finally.
Yeah,
right. Having made the playoffs three times in 20 years as a result of short-term thinking, and they make it to the Stanley Cup final. They win the first two. They lose the second two.
Oh, my gosh.
They go behind 3-2. The other team ties it up. Game 7, overtime. It's Vancouver versus the Buffalo Sabres. That's what I don't want to see.
Oh, now I kind of do.
I don't want to see two absolutely cursed fan bases tortured in that manner. Even if it is an epic relief for one of them, I just don't want to see that. I don't think either hockey mad market deserves that.
I don't know. You're kind of talking me into it. Can you imagine first franchise Stanley Cup on the line for both teams in Game 7 overtime? That's like CBS putting the for the career Grand Slam graphic up on Rory's putt that he missed
at
the Masters. It's like, wow, just pile it on a little more, guys. And Trucker James, by the way, adds to this and says, in total, it's been won in overtime 17 times. So not elimination for both teams, but
yeah.
17 times.
Like the Alec Martinez goal or that I've seen. I've seen the Uwe Krupp.
And that's still really cool.
Oh,
obviously.
Super cool.
Don't get us wrong. That's awesome. Like instant game-winning goal to win the Stanley Cup. Just give me the Game 7 overtime.
Didn't the Golden Knights win in overtime against the Caps?
Possibly. I'd have to go back and check.
Pretty confident they did.
Anyways. All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Hank the Tank texts in. I've become deeply disillusioned with this management group. I really like a couple things they do. Their prone amateur scouting seems legitimately sharp. I think Emily Castonguay is solid when it comes to contracts, but this club has shown repeated concerning behavior when it comes to interpersonal relationships and interactions, how they talk to the public, interact and deal with their players, employees, prospects. What I've learned in team building is that relationships and how you treat people matters more than anything, and I feel really concerned that this is how this group operates. I think this is a to state the obvious, this is a massive stretch. And when you are, whether you want to say like a massive 2 weeks, a massive 4 months till next season, whatever it is, put the time frame on it. This is a massive stretch for management when it comes to how much the market is buying in and how much confidence the market has in this management team. And it start, you came in right after getting back from the availability, coming into studio and saying, number one thing is unsettled. Their job is to settle it, right? Their job is to take it from unsettled to a feeling of settled and instill some confidence. That starts with Rick Tocchet. I think Tom Volander plays a big role in that. I think how they negotiate and navigate Pugh Suter and Brock Besser plays a big role in that. Obviously, the larger...
Talk, man.
Tocchet's number one.
It comes down to talk. Like
that's the thing you have to take care of before you get to all the other stuff. Now, doing talk in and of itself doesn't obviously magically change things to settled, but you have to do that to get on the path to being settled.
But if your hand-picked guy, who you took a lot of hits to land, and who was the right pick, you were right, flag plant right,
mm-hmm.
that he was needed, and you hold a team option, so it's not easy for him to extricate himself. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to have to take a hit to walk away. And if he is willing to, that's going to be a very challenging thing for this organization to explain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he's going to or he's not going to. I don't have insight into that. I'm just saying if it pans out that way, man, I think that's going to be a major story and a major hit to the organization's credibility, especially given the endorsement that he has from Quinn Hughes.
My point, though, is that just getting him done is not enough to change this to a very settled situation. There's more. That's number one, and that's probably a prerequisite for everything else, but there's a lot more work to do after that.
Absolutely. I mean, that's number one, but Pettersson is 1A.
Yes.
Right? That the truth is that whether it's because there's a absolute unequivocal endorsement of Pettersson on Monday, right? Or some finality one way or the other this offseason, that's a huge situation that demands an answer in some way from the organization over the course of the summer, and also an answer from Pettersson in terms of his performance going forward.
All right, we'll take one final break here on the show. More reaction, more analysis coming up after the Canucks spoke to the media today at Rogers Arena. Send your text in as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. We're here live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. And you can continue to send your texts in now. We've spent a lot of the last hour talking Rick Tocchet, talking Elias Pettersson, obviously, what that relationship looks like going forward, all of that. You get it, the Miller-Pettersson rift. But there were some other notes of interest to come out of media availability today for the Canucks. We mentioned them, a couple of them, in the whiteboard off the top of the show. But one of the most interesting ones to me was Thatcher Demko asked about the fact that he's about to be extension eligible as of July 1st with only 1 year left on his deal. And of course, given his season, how frustrating it was, how much he dealt with injuries, and also Kevin Lankinen signing a long-term extension with the Canucks after he performed really well. I was very interested to hear what Thatcher Demko would have to say about his future in Vancouver. Here is Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to be a Canuck since day one. I want to be here, obviously drafted here. And I'd like to get an extension done, stay here. Obviously, that's something that, you know, Patrick and my agent will start talking about. But, I'll let them focus on that. I'm focused on, you know, getting myself back to where I know I can be. And, everything will play itself out.
That's Thatcher Demko, and pretty strong there, right? About as strong as you can get, saying, I've always wanted to be a Canuck. I want to be here. I want to sign an extension. He does say, you know, hey, listen, I'm going to let Patrick Alvin, my agent, they're going to deal with that. I've got other stuff to focus on. Everything will play itself out. But not a lot of equivocation there from Thatcher Demko expressing his desire to stay with the Vancouver Canucks. We won't play the clip, but he was also asked about Kevin Lankinen's extension and his performance. And Thatcher Demko again saying all the right things. Lanks deserved every dollar he got. He had a great season. He's been a great goalie partner. They committed to him. I don't think that changes, though, how I feel about coming back or being here. Thinks there can be a great partnership between the two. And it's also worth noting in this discussion, Kevin Lankinen asked about his time here. And I think he was the most positive guy at the podium today. because Kevin Lang was like, yeah, it was great. Great experience. I've loved my time here. A goal was to find a place where I could showcase myself as a number one goalie, and he likes how everything worked out. So there has been the question of, will Thatcher Demko be interested in this kind of tandem work with Kevin Lankinen? And he didn't give any sign that that was going to be an issue. In fact, quite the opposite. He said, yeah, no, no problem. Doesn't change anything from my perspective. Like Kevin Lankinen, like working with him, and I still want to be back. My question from a Canucks team perspective is, and it's always been, if you're looking at this more as a goalie tandem going forward, and that certainly seems to be the case given what you've invested in Kevin Lankinen, how much are you willing to pay Thatcher Demko on top of that to be a 1A as opposed to a clear-cut number one? That, I think, is going to be the sticking point here in negotiations, but very notable to me that Thatcher Demko was so clear and so direct in his desire to reach an extension and remain in Vancouver.
Yeah. Yeah, he was clear. He was direct. He was engaging. I think he really was thoughtful about how he handled media all year.
Yes.
Which is good to see. The range of outcomes is just so wide.
How do you see it, the specifically? Because you're right. Like, independent of Kevin Lankinen, Thatcher Demko extension is difficult. How do you see any interaction with the Kevin Lankinen contract, though? Because to me, it does impact, like, how much you're willing to invest in a guy.
Well, I do see it. I think, though, that, I mean, I've been, I, the problem is the injury context around Demko's season has so significantly changed the conversation to the point where, you know, I thought it was a pretty interesting declaration today when Demko said, I still think of myself as the same guy.
Yes, I can be a vet. I can be a Vezina nominee. I can be that guy again.
He can. Like, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
We all agree. But the conversation around him is so different. I don't understand. Like, if you believe that you can be that guy again, why do you want to sign an extension this summer?
That's fair. Now, there.
I'll be honest with you. I think that's, for me, if I was, like, I'm truly, if I was an executive making the decision and the player's side was really eager to do a deal, I would be less likely to.
Because you think it speaks to a desire for security and kind of protecting yourself from the risk of another injury-riddled season.
Correct. If you believe you can be that guy again, why aren't you trying to get paid to be that guy as opposed to having the conversation we're going to have if we're doing a deal now?
Now, the implicit part of any player saying, I want to be back, I want to sign an extension, the small print is at the right price.
Oh, of course.
And so Demko could in his perspective be saying, I still look at myself as the Vezina nominee caliber goalie, and I would be interested in signing an extension on those terms.
Well, that's,
you know what I mean?
But that's not a conversation that I can even have, right? Like
that's not reality.
There's been like a wave of goaltenders signing all at about eight with term, right? The Jake Oettinger class.
Mm-hmm. Swayman,
yeah, exactly. And like, I don't even think that's a realistic conversation to have after this season right now. But it could be in 12 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
I know that's ruthless and unfair, yeah, but that's just truly how I'd feel about it.
Yeah, I totally understand that. But I just wonder if there's an implicit second part in what Demko's thinking, whereas he's saying, yeah, I'm still that guy. And that would inform what he's looking for in contract discussions. You know, maybe it's a little bit of a discount, but not the full injury discount type of thing. And so that kind of accounts for why he's like, yeah, I'm the same guy. So why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I sign right now? You know what I mean? There's no reason for me to wait. I don't need to prove anything. I'm still that guy.
Well, so I'm a little bit torn on this because, okay, parameters of what we're going to try and do, right? If the parameters of what the Canucks are going to try and do is we want to contend next year. And if we believe that while this group struggles to maintain year-over-year consistency, or has historically, they can pretty impressively get the ball rolling downhill. And once it's rolling downhill, they actually can be pretty dangerous. And at the end of the day, one thing I never got to do was have that ball rolling downhill with this core and healthy Demko. I never got to do that.
Yep.
Not once. There'd be a stubborn part of me, I think, if I were Canucks management, that would be like,
I want to see that. I want to take one last swing at that.
I'm willing to take one last swing at it. Now, if that requires an extension now at the Ottinger-Swayman market value, which Demko's performance has warranted, but his durability and availability has not, that's too big a, that the brick is too expensive for me to be willing to see that through.
Yeah.
Frankly. Especially given my emergency needs up front. Because I think the most compelling thing that I keep coming back to in thinking about Demko and his Canucks future is I love the luxury of having Demko with Lankanen as a platoon. I love the idea of Demko playing 30 games and then I go into him with go into the playoffs with him as my game one starter. And I see if I can just like, can I capture a magic Demko 6 week run, which we've seen him stretch together almost every season he's played. He's had 6 weeks where it's just like, oh my God, he never gets beat. Oh my God. Every time the Canucks score first, you feel sorry for the other team. He's so dominant. If I could ever get that in May and June, right? I would be very interested in seeing where that could go. But as tempting as that is, as nice a luxury as that seems, is it a luxury I can afford given my needs up front? And the answer I keep coming back to is
probably
I don't think so.
Yeah, you can certainly see the appeal in the Lankanen-Demko tandem. Like a healthy Lankanen-Demko tandem is very, very interesting. And I guess, you know, not to bring everything back to Pettersson, but if you were 100% confident or 90% confident that Pettersson was going to be an elite player next year, an elite number one center, does it make it easier to say, you know what? Okay, if we have that and Quinn Hughes and these guys and our defense and Tocchet's structure, and maybe we had one impact forward instead of two or three, that's worth taking a swing at. I could buy into that. It's the uncertainty at forward, as you say, that makes it difficult to really see the upside and the ceiling there enough, being there enough with that version of the team. But we'll see. And it sounds like they're going to talk extension. I think it will be difficult to hammer out a number that both sides can agree on and in term and all of that. But Thatcher Demko, at least very clear that he wants to be back next season. On the subject a little bit of what's happening up front with the team, some other notes from Rick Tocchet. And a couple things we can dig into here a little bit. One, talking about his coaching staff, and he kind of downplayed some of what we've talked about, hey, do you need a different voice on the power play or at least somebody just clear-cut doing the power play? And he basically said, that's Yogi. Now, our understanding maybe was it's been kind of a dual thing between Rick Tocchet and Yogi Shevkovsky, but Tocchet saying, you know what, I don't think it is that we need a new power play coach. We have good concepts. We just need to have some better buy-in, have to be better in key moments.
I wouldn't say he completely shut the door to it. He just defended his guy.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it didn't sound like a top priority or a front burner thing for him. That's how I would characterize it. It wasn't like Yogi did a great job, but that's something we'll look at. It was more just like Yogi did a great job. You know what I mean? And I think there's a difference there. It didn't sound like something that he thinks needs to be addressed to me. Anyways, what he did suggest was, you know, Sergei Gonchar has been working kind of as a part-time coach for the team. Tocchet kind of said, maybe that's not going to work. Maybe we need another body on staff. And then beyond that, he was also asked about, okay, you came into camp with a lot of focus on generating rush chances, some different personnel. This is a real point of emphasis for you guys. And then obviously, you know, we all know where the team finished in shots on goal and chances and goal scoring in general. They were one of the worst offensive teams in the league at 5-on-5. And Rick Tocchet took accountability for that. He also dropped what I thought was a very telling reference to, you know, when these things start kind of piling up against you, you have to strategize about how you're going to stay in games. And so I think a lot of that focus on the rush offense and all of that got kind of thrown out the window. They battened down the hatches and just said, look, we have to play this style to be able to have a chance in these games. And then Rick Tocchet also said, you know, it's something he's got to work on. It's something he's got to work on and find different ways to generate offense. And the more this season went along, the more I kind of thought that the rush element of it specifically was not a distraction necessarily, but it was more all-encompassing than that. And where I eventually landed was, I don't really care if it's off the rush or off the cycle, but you just need a way to find a way to be getting to the dangerous areas more and generating dangerous chances more often and more consistently and at more volume. And again, I don't care if it's off the rush, dump and chase and forecheck, cycle, whatever you want to do, find a way to accomplish that. I think that, to Rick Tocchet's credit, he acknowledged that he has to be better. He has to go back to the drawing board and think about it. And it's something that, if he's back with the Canucks next year, is going to be, again, a major point of emphasis for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, bringing in a new body, suggesting that the part-time thing is tough. Yep. Maybe needs a little more buy-in, a little more consistency on staff. Thought that was pretty interesting. Excuse me. That's my alarm going off to remind me to submit my NHL awards ballot by 5 p.m. Eastern time.
And did you?
I did.
Good. Good job.
Thank you. I'm gonna spoil it. We're not supposed to do this, but I'm gonna spoil it. I might have had Quinn Hughes down ballot on for Hart.
Wow.
I think I couldn't ignore what I really was wrestling with it, and I couldn't ignore. I couldn't ignore the level that he hit in the first 50 games, man.
It was pretty incredible. Rick Tocchet said the same thing. 50-game stretch where he was like right there with the best players in the league.
I think he was absolutely Mick Davidian in terms of his impact. The best I've seen night in, night out from any individual skater, which of course only adds to my disappointment with the rest of what I saw this season. You know, in some ways it like ups the stakes for how ridiculous it is that Inter-C9 drama.
Well, that you got 50 games like that and you're out of the playoffs.
50 games, you're out of the playoffs. 50 games like that. And a lot of the time when he wasn't on the ice, it felt like guys didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
I just can't. Like, I can't. It's so frustrating. Anyway, what were we talking about?
Offense. Talk it. Back to the drawing board. Offensively.
Well, they need... You know, I asked the question, but at the end of the day, like, what was the game where the Canucks, the Minnesota game, where the Canucks take the 2-0 lead against the Wild and the Wild come back and win in overtime. And at the top of the lineup, it was like 40 shot attempts for Minnesota and 10 for the Canucks. And people are like, Rick Tocchet parking the bus. And it's like, dude, just ground out a point. With Atu Ratu as the second line center against a playoff bound Wild team. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Like, you want Rick Tocchet to put his pedal down?
Open it up.
Open it up with Pew Suter as your first line center. Like, come on. So anyway, I do think, you know, the Hedl Pedersen injuries late really hurt.
Yeah.
The Miller trade really hurt. Hronek missing as many games as he did. Quinn Hughes, the 50 games versus the last 20 was a pretty stark difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think they had the personnel for it. I don't think they had the puck moving in the first half of the year, and then they rebuilt their defense, but they didn't have the juice up front, and it's just whack-a-mole. It's just whack-a-mole with a team that just, frankly, needs more talent. And that's going to be the critical task of this offseason, beyond just settling things down and creating a sense of certainty around this group. Because that, to me, is, again, the biggest thing we come out of today with. Head coach, best player, most expensive player, massive questions looming as we go into this offseason. Star goalie, last season's leading goal scorer, massive questions around them going into this offseason. Top prospect, massive questions around him. Like, at some point,
got to start answering some of these questions. We got to move some into the answered column.
Into the answered column, and with outcomes and like, that Canucks fans
answered,
can start
answered well.
Yeah, answered in a way that Canucks fans can start to get their chests out and get excited about.
Yeah,
you know.
Odds and ends from kind of the rest of it. So Pew Suter UFA, Filip Hedl injury status. And anything else, I thought Jake DeBrusk's answer was really interesting about his season. And he's like, yeah, I mean, all my goals were tip-ins. He was basically like, why didn't I score any off the rush? Why didn't I score the goals I scored my whole career? I thought that was a pretty interesting answer from Jake DeBrusk. Anything else jump out to you that caused you to maybe okay, I'm thinking about this differently, or this is something I need to monitor? Anything else that stood out to you from some of the other not as high profile commentary that we heard today from Canucks players?
Hedl saying that he cleared the protocol.
That's a big one. And Hedl, obviously, you could just tell, was really excited.
Really excited.
Really happy and really excited about getting that practice in and being able to have a normal summer.
Yeah, he can do a lot more, I think, too, than we saw. To be totally honest with you, I liked his game. I didn't like the results.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like, at the very least, if you're generating and entering the zone with speed and control as frequently as he was, so often those possessions ended up being sort of wasted. Like, nothing came of it. But if you're doing that consistently, like, over time, it's going to work. Over time, you're going to start to get returns from that. So I like... If Hedl can be healthy, I think he can be a huge part of this team next season and a big sort of part of the answer, which doesn't sort of minimize this team's need for more down the middle, but at least it's a meaningful middle six NHL center.
There were fans, and I understand why, who were kind of crossing him off the depth chart after the head injury, right? Where it's like, well, now we don't have Hedl either.
Yeah.
That was premature.
Yeah, way premature. It's like, but it does people do that every year with Tua Tagovailoa too in football, and it's just like, these guys, like this.
Yeah.
Those decisions don't get made lightly, man.
But it does look way different with him as an option because of the upside and just the completely different dynamic that he brings relative to every other option at center, right? Like, even if you really like what you saw from Atu Ratu, totally different thing from Filip Hedl. Pius Suter, if he's back, different, totally different skill set. Great skill set, but totally different skill set from Filip Hedl and what he can bring. And if you are looking to be more dangerous off the rush and just be more dangerous offensively in general, if you can slot in Filip Hedl as your third line center, that's a huge step. That's a big, big step in the right direction for the Vancouver Canucks. So great to hear from Filip Hedl that he's feeling positive and feeling really good about having a healthy summer going in to next season. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can keep sending your thoughts in. Pius Suter didn't get fielded a lot of questions because he was up with some of the other key guys. But
he won the draw.
So, yeah, he absolutely did. He absolutely did. Getting to go up with Demko, Besser, and Hughes. Pretty noncommittal and like nothing earth shattering either way. I wouldn't say you're closing the door on it, but you know, he said, yeah, I love to be here, but you know, it'll figure itself out. Hopes to have it done before August this time, which is when he was signed last go around as an unrestricted free agent.
I like that line. I suspect he'll be fine. I don't think he'll have to wait.
I don't think he's going to get past July 1st. I think it's going to be a July 1st signing for Pius Suter today.
I mean, if he does, this is truly the least efficient collection of talent evaluators in pro sports. And I don't believe that that's the case.
Could
for
be
NFL
like a
games.
July 2nd.
No,
but it'll be July 1st.
No, it'll be July 1st.
It'll be July 1st.
He's like the second best center poised to hit unrestricted free agency. I don't know what else to tell people.
That's true. 25 goals.
Elite defensive play.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else to tell anyone. Like, guy rocks. Pay the man.
And by the way, Rick Dhaliwal reported earlier today on Halford and Brough that no real talks between Pius Suter and management, or no offer, I should say, made to Pius Suter. There have been talks that kind of understand a general framework, but no official offer yet made to Pius Suter. And again, I mean, we just went through the list of major, major questions facing this team. You can understand why Pius Suter's a little farther down the priority list. Hopefully they get some of those other questions sorted out and they can at least figure out if Pius Suter is going to be back or if he's going to hit unrestricted free agency on July 1st. And of course, maybe we will start to get some answers to all of those questions around the Canucks right now when Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford speak with the media next week. It's going to be Monday at 10 a.m. So very similar setup to how it was today. We'll have the comments live on Sportsnet 650. Drance and I will be in after the fact to give you the full breakdown and the full reaction. It's also the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs this weekend, so enjoy that. We'll have full coverage of that on our show going forward, as well as we do the the dual thing here on Canucks Talk, where we're focused on the Canucks, but we're also keeping a close eye on the playoffs and everything happening there. As I mentioned earlier, it's the People's Show with Bick and Randeep coming up next for 2 hours, and then that leads you into 2 hours of Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, and I expect they will have a series of exclusive one-on-one, or two-on-one, I guess I should say, interviews with Canucks players from earlier today at Rogers Arena. So lots more Canucks coverage coming up. Have a great long weekend here. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.